Blog Talk Radio.
Our roots began in Africa, where we enjoyed self-determination and freedom, which were rooted in our sovereignty. Peace, family. Welcome to Dare to Win, the Us Lifting Us weekly radio program that airs every Thursday evening from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Dare to Win is the place where we have sobering conversations about the economic plight of Black people and the imperative that we build the global economic machinery that will free us and once again put us on the path of making history. We at Us Lifting Us have developed an exact methodology on how to build this global machinery and pass it forward to our children and future generations. To join tonight's conversation, please call 929-477-279. Press the number 1 on your phone when you want to make a comment or ask a question. If you prefer to listen on your computer, go to www.uslistingus.com. Go down to the bottom of the home page, click on the Dare to Win button, then click on Listen Live. At that time, you will be on the Blog Talk Radio site. If you want to get reminders from Blog Talk Radio for upcoming Dare to Win programs, click on the Follow button. ULU members, we have our own social media community. Please join if you have not already done so. There is a Dare to Win group, and we would like to have your feedback on past Dare to Win programs, as well as topic suggestions for future programs. Go to uslifting.us.com. You can reach the Ulu community through the members-only portal. When you register for the Ulu community, please use the same name you use to join Ulu. I'm Sister Q, and joining me for this evening's discussion is Brother Ankhi. Tonight's topic is Only Ulu Will Work. Why? Peace, Brother Ankhi. How are you doing tonight?
Peace, Sister Q. I am doing well. Good to hear you. As always, good to be with the family.
It's good to have you, Brother Ankhi. We look forward to our discussion. So, Brother Ankhi, why do you say that only Ulu will work?
Thank you, Sister Q, for the question. I mean that on two levels. The first is has to do with our name, Us Lifting Us. And what we mean by that is those of us who are aware of our African roots, like our theme song says, our roots began in Africa. Those of us who are aware and appreciate the richness of our tradition, the value of the African continent and the consciousness that enabled our people to build the first civilizations, create language, develop writing and paper, develop religion, and art and music and dance and architecture, all of the things that make civilization up began in Africa. And so for those of us who understand that and who appreciate that, that us have taken on the responsibility of lifting the rest of our people until they also can understand the richness of our tradition and the imperative that we build on that tradition to offer ourselves and our children a new life. And so when we say Ulu, not only are we talking about that us lifting the other us, we are also talking about the organization, Us Lifting Us Economic Development Cooperative, because that is the organism that we are building to give us a future, to give us a hope, to give us a legacy to pass forward to our children. And we say it's the only way because as a result of our analysis of where we are right now on April, what is this? April, the soon to be the 14th, April the 13th, 2023, the world is in a crisis. And if we examine the context of our lives right now, very important that we need to delve into and really understand because the implications of what they suggest for us say if we do not organize ourselves correctly and appropriately, we're going to be in for a world of hurt. So I see two things that I want to lift up and have a conversation with you and our listeners tonight, Sister Q. The first has to do with the coming climate collapse. If we look at the news over the last couple of weeks, we've been bombarded with, as always, news of Trump, news of certainly gun violence, and the reactionary strategies that are being put in place against us as a people. And and the whole subject of climate change has been pushed off of the radar almost completely. And if we think about it, the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the IPCC, recently came out with a paper reiterating that if we do not reduce carbon emissions by 50% by 2030, we're going to start seeing some very severe climate impacts. As a matter of fact, we've been already witnessing them for the last decade and a half at least, but they're going to become even more intense. The use, the consumption, the burning, the drilling, the mining of carbon for fossil fuel has reached the point where it is disrupting the water cycles, the global water cycles. And so now we are witnessing these very bizarre weather events around flooding and drought and tornadoes and hurricanes, all of these systems that are involving water. And we notice that the temperatures are fluctuating more wildly than we can remember them doing so in recent memory. So Mother Nature is trying to warn us that the climate is in very dire condition, but we would rather spend our energy doing things like banning books or defunding libraries or arguing about critical race theory than dealing with this very critical issue that if we don't get our arms around very quickly, it's going to leave a lot of people extremely vulnerable to these drastic and severe weather events. And so that's important for us to understand. And what's mind-boggling is that the only reason that this is happening is because of capitalism's need to control energy. Even though the movement towards renewable sources of energy have gotten us to the place where the cost of solar and thermal and wind are comparable now to oil, the major oil companies, because their portfolios are tied to the production of oil and gas and to some degree nuclear, they are going to hang on and develop these industries and push this form of energy for as long as they can, even in the face of disrupting the climate for the entire planet. And so that's the irresponsible and very manic behavior of capitalism in 2023. And that the impact that it's having on the climate, we are at a point now where any oil that's still in the ground needs to stay there. It does not need to be drilled up and burned and consumed in any form or fashion, because that is pushing us over the tipping point. But we're not having these conversations. And tragically, the people who will be most adversely affected by the disruption of the water cycles and these extreme weather events, many of them are in the global south. That is, they are Africans, peoples of color, whether we're talking South America, the African continent, parts of Southeast Asia. And unfortunately, these primarily are the poorer peoples who have fewer resources to rebound from these very drastic weather occurrences. So that's number one, the coming climate collapse if we don't stop the madness in its tracks right away. The second phenomenon that we're witnessing is this rise of fascism. And fascism is a form of authoritarian control of the government apparatus. The most recent memory that many of us would think of would be Nazi Germany under Hitler, and at the same time fascist Italy under Mussolini. When that authoritarian political development and led the world into what we call World War II, most people at the conclusion of that four years of carnage would agree that authoritarianism was a very bad idea. So why is it getting new life right now? I mean, why are people like Ron DeSantis and these Republicans running around pushing for these restrictions on women's rights, restrictions on voting rights, restrictions on what people can read, all of this authoritarian governmental oppression against people? Why are we getting back to that? And it comes down to a very simple truth. These are people who are now in the minority in their own country. And that is what has the Republican Party, who are, I guess you could say, the spokespeople for this tendency, who are afraid of finding themselves in a political environment where they are outnumbered by people of color. I mean, that's basically what we're talking about when you boil it down. And before they allow other people in this country who have been here for as long as everybody else, who have certainly paid their dues, who have certainly contributed to the building of this country, but before we will allow them to participate fully in the running of this country, we will snatch back those voting privileges and those voting rights, and we will make this country only available for a certain group of folk, i.e., your MAGA Republicans, your white folks who are afraid of being quote unquote replaced by other ethnic groups who also live in the United States. And so the reason we're seeing this rise in authoritarianism is because that's the only way they can run the country. They can't use the democracy anymore because they would be outvoted. So they have to gerrymander the states where they have power, and then by hook or crook, they have to keep themselves in office. And even if that means throwing elected officials out of state legislatures who are advocating for the interests of their constituencies, the two brothers in Tennessee, who in response to the shooting in Nashville, joined the protest to say, yes, we have to have common sense gun reform in Tennessee. And for taking that stand, they're thrown out of the legislature. I mean, that is bizarre beyond anything we can imagine. And so rather than address the issue of this rampant gun violence that has just become as American as American pie, as apple pie, they would rather throw these two brothers out of the legislature. So what we are really witnessing is the collapse of capitalism. And what we don't understand is that capitalism, because it forms the economic base of America, as the economy, as the economic system collapses, society also collapses with it. And so here we are in the midst of this just heartrending crisis of gun violence. None of these legislatures will do anything concrete that leads to a solution. They're paralyzed because they owe their seats to the National Rifle Association and the various gun lobby groups that fuel their campaigns. So the legislatures aren't going to do anything. Meanwhile, children and people are dying in the classrooms. They're dying in the grocery stores. They're dying in churches. They're dying at events. It's just sweeping across the country, and people really are afraid, and they're witnessing the paralysis of the government to do anything intelligent in response. But all of this are the contradictions and the rising contradictions of an imploding capitalist economic system. Now, that becomes important, Sister Q, because the task that it means for us as African Americans and African people, wherever we find ourselves in the world, is as capitalist-driven civilization crumbles and decays, what will take its place? And that's why we say in tonight's program that Ulu is the only way forward. Not only is the economic system the system that allows for the production and distribution of goods and services, so yes, your economy provides for housing and food and clothing and cell phones and tablets and everything else that we consume is provided through the operation of the economic system. We're clear on that.
Mm-hmm.
What may not be as clear is that not only is the economic system providing the goods and the services, it's also generating or pushing into the veins of the society a certain set of values. And those values in capitalism are materialism, hypermaterialism. In other words, if I can't touch it, see it, smell it, feel it, it's not real. It doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that is important is stuff that I can touch, matter. Matter is ultimate reality in capitalist philosophy. It's also a system based on hyper-individualism. Is whatever makes me happy, whatever satisfies my needs, my desires, my hopes, my dreams, it's all about me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not concerned about how life is for Sister Q or Brother Shabaka or anybody on this call. I could care less about any of y'all. The only thing I'm concerned about is what's happening with me and my family. And maybe the next door neighbor, maybe, depending. But it's this sense of the Lone Ranger mindset. The entire society is organized around elevating the desires and the dreams of quote unquote the individual. And that's why when the community has a problem, it's hard to come together and come up with a solution that benefits the group, because all of the conditioning has said the group is not important. What's important is the individual. So this dress mm-hmm. looks good on me. This pair of shoes is really the bomb. This car makes a statement about how bad I am. All the advertising that we are bombarded with, the message in that is, this is all for you. Won't you be the bomb when people see you carrying this or wearing this or rolling in this? So there's this idea of the individual being elevated to the level of there's nothing more important than the individual. The other piece that goes along with that is the competition. So mm-hmm. it's all about survival of the fittest. Only the strong survive. So there's this, we compete for everything. And, we're titillated by competition. So that's it built into the system. Now, the other value that's undergirding all of this that we don't ever talk about is the need to dominate and control other groups and other people. That was the lesson that Dr. Frances Kress Welting helped us to understand in her work when she talked about racism being a system of global domination, whereby people who classify themselves as white dominate and control people they classify as non-white for the purpose of genetic survival. But mm-hmm. the point that she was driving home for us to understand is that white supremacy is predicated upon the violent control of other people. And that's the piece that is at the heart and the core of capitalism, this violent domination of everything, of the mother nature, of peoples of color, of women, of children, of everything. There's this need to dominate and control and to exploit. These are the values of capitalism. And so, yes, it provides you with the Tesla or with the Cadillac or with the car of your choice. Yes, it provides you with the Gucci bag or whatever the bling is that you like. But it also provides this materialistic, competitive, individualistic, and violent need, violent domination of others. All of this is intertwined with the way capitalism operates. And we see it at its most extreme in the United States. So that being said, the question comes down to, as this system begins to disintegrate, as the contradictions become so glaring that, you know, like we used to say, even Ray Charles can see it, it's obvious that something will have to take its place. In science, it says nature abhors a vacuum. So we know that as this system implodes, as it becomes more bizarre, the way it operates becomes more destructive of everything and everyone, obviously something is going to have to replace it. And so that's good news for us, because this system is really destructive of Africa and every place where African people live throughout the diaspora. So the collapse of capitalism is not something we're crying about. However, if we don't have something to replace it, then it's going to be extremely hard for us to make it. And so that is why, again, us lifting us is the only way, because when we talk about rebuilding a civilization, it starts with, well, what is your philosophical framework? What are the basic principles, or what are the basic tenets that your people believe in or hold to be true? And so we've talked about this in other programs, but I just want to lift up a few of them, so that our listeners can begin to think about the very profound difference that an African philosophical economic outlook would hold up versus this European capitalist worldview.
This Brother Umpty, an article... before you go forward, we have a hand up.
Sure. Let's
can
take
we
that.
Take this call and then you...
let's do that.
Yeah. Okay. Caller with the last four digits, 3429, state your name, where you're calling from, ask your question or make your comment. Thank you.
Oh, yeah, I was listening. I don't know how I got in the queue, but I'm here.
Okay. Well, thank you.
No, since I'm here, I'll go ahead and ask a question. It's kind of off topic, but of course I'd love to. Are you all familiar with what's happening with the OMB and the and those hearings at the OMB regarding reclassifying our races and ethnicities and a lot of races trying to delineate? Are you all familiar with that process that is happening right now?
I personally am not either.
Yes, what's happening?
Go ahead.
But go ahead and make your point, brother.
No, you did but, you say you were, sir?
No, neither one of us are.
Oh, yes. Yeah, basically what's happening, the OMB is opening up the for public comments and, you know, for public comments about, you know, of course, reclassifying, you know, of course, delineating as far as some of these races. The Asians are delineating. Some Armenians are delineating from Asians. Then, of course, there's the conversation. So what's about to happen is that there's about to be a category specifically for Black Americans and anybody who, you know, of course, that would identify is you know, Black American, with, you know, of course, there might even be some penalties, but there will be a group for all people to specify who they are, so it won't just be, you know, flat Blackness, flat Asian, flat Latino, Hispanic. So the cutoff period was yesterday, and so I know, as he was saying, we're Africans and all these. I was just wondering, were you all familiar with what was going on with that, OMB?
I'm not. What does OMB stand for, please?
Office of Management and Budget. It's the it's the federal agency that handles all of the matters pertaining to the census and of course budget, okay. Ways and Means, those things. It's the Office of Management and Budget.
Thank you.
I'll say this, you know, Spirit is never ceases to amaze me how intelligent Spirit is. One of the things that Dr. John Henry Clark reminded us of, he said that it's not important where the ships, slave ships, dropped us off. What's really important is where we got picked up from. So this energy around delineating race, or, you know, perhaps drawing more specific categories, probably has more to do with distraction and confusion around, because there are certain groups that are rather distinct, and in terms of who's exercising power right now, you know, obviously we have Europeans, we have Jews, we have Indians, we have Slavs, and like the Russians. Certainly they're the Chinese, the Japanese. So there are large groupings. And the reason I think that that's probably going on, brother, is because what we're witnessing on the global stage is this, right now it's tension between these large ethnic groups. And there's a vying for power. And where the world used to be bipolar, that is, you know, United States versus Russia, now we see a multipolar kind of geopolitics. So China's in the game. Russia's still in the game. The United States is in the game. But there are other players coming to the forefront as well. And so
yeah.
if there's a process afoot to quote-unquote delineate some of these ethnic groups, it may be as a way of separating them and dividing them to weaken their power. But yes. I think our concern as Africans has to be, when I say Africans, I mean people of African descent. A lot of the distinctions that people might want to draw has to do more with they're trying to play the divide and conquer game with us, because we really have more in common than we do in terms of what is different. And
yeah,
our challenge
I actually don't think so. It's unique to the United States. This delineation is taking place in the United States. I don't know other countries are doing this. Because even in France, I mean, they don't even have racial categories. But it's about, and I welcome it, and because for me, and for people, you know, my ilk, it's more about preventing ethnocide and erasure, because the fact is, Africans are already delineated. They're delineated by countries. They're delineated by tribes, and so Black Americans it's a matter of you know, preserving, you know, to because if everybody's Black, and if everybody's Black American, then what was my great-great-granddaddy? And it's more than it's a lot more. That's the response that we typically get from Pan-Africans. That, you know, John Henry Clark said, you know, where we were picked up from. But the truth of the matter is, we stopped being African when we left, when they sold us over here, when they put us on that boat, the umbilical cord was cut, and we came here.
No,
and we amalgamated.
No. I would challenge you on that.
Hello?
100%. One of the things that happened to us is when as we arrived, there was a conscious effort to say that we came here as a blank slate, and that African Americans are a unique or a distinct group, and not necessarily African the same way people from the continent are. That's not true. When there were many, many Africanisms that survived our journey across the Atlantic Ocean. And there are a couple of resources that this brother and others should look at in terms of understanding what survived. Jeremiah Wright has done extensive work, for example, in you know, when it was first talked about, people made jokes about it, but Ebonics. And the point that Dr. Wright was making was that Ebonics was English words into an African grammar system. In other words, the reason why we speak a certain way and arrange words in, you know, subject, object, verb, in certain arrangements, those were survivals of our bringing those language patterns to the United States from Africa. And if you just listen to the way that, especially in the South, if you listen to the way we speak, you'll hear those patterns once you know what to listen for. So I know I was in seminary and we were taking a course, and that very subject came up as to whether or not any of the African traits from the continent survived into the United States, into our sojourn here in North America. One of the things that was pointed out was that there were matrilineal family systems that replicated in North America. And I saw it firsthand. My wife came from a family of her mother had 14 children. Her grandmother had 16 children. And where they lived was really a compound. The grandmother, the mother, and her children, all of the daughters, lived within a half mile of each other, and they ran in and out of each other's houses. And what that was a survival of African ways of arranging their families. And so this idea that African Americans are divorced from the African continent, I think is fallacious. And if we're willing to do the reading, we'll see that there are just many, many examples of these African ideas that made it over into North America. It shows up in the religious practices, whether you're Primitive Baptist or AME or some other things. Some of these concepts still maintain their vibrancy and their presence in African communities now. Now, we are losing some aspects of this for sure, but to say that we somehow are unique as Africans on the planet, I would argue with that. But the point that I think the brother helps us to get to is that our goal as a people is global African sovereignty. Now, the challenge, I think, and Sister Q helped me with this, I would assert that until Africa is united and independent and sovereign, that the dignity and the empowerment of African people anywhere else on the planet is at risk. We, in order to be at our full empowerment, in order to exercise sovereignty, the African continent has to be united and independent. Because the reason that we say the goal is sovereignty is because sovereignty is the highest form of power that we know on the planet. That when you are a sovereign people, you are able to control your physical space, your social space, your mental space. You are in control of your resources. And that is what African people are working to regain, that level of power where we control the geography where we are, we control the resources where we are, we control our interior space where we are, in other words, our minds. That is the goal. And the only way that we can achieve that kind of empowerment, that level of sovereignty, I would say it this way. Sovereignty is complete control over yourself and your environment. And by this definition, only groups can exercise sovereignty. Individuals experience the effects of sovereignty by virtue of their membership in a group which has sovereignty. Therefore, African people must build the organizations and institutions that will afford us sovereignty as well. Simply stated, African people must build an alternative civilization for ourselves and our children. Process begins with our people re-embracing African communalism or African consciousness as our ideological framework. Ezra Aharon writes about us as a people developing a sovereign psyche. In other words, we must think that we're sovereign. We must think sovereign before we become sovereign. And Brother Grant, in this article, Ifowosowopo Economics, says, he suggests several principles for us to consider. And this is what I wanted to get to before we run out of time tonight, Sister Q. When he thinks about African communalism as what it would look like in the 21st century, right? This is African economic systems before the incursions of Europeans onto the African continent, right? Mm-hmm. So he says the acknowledgement and the recognition that the most fundamental aspect of existence is spirit, and that this should underpin all forms of interaction within the African world. If you want to understand what makes Africans uniquely different from Europeans, is that Africans have a very profound embrace of spirit as being ultimate reality. In other words, where Europeans tend to put their hat on materialism, in other words, when they see us worshiping and being in relationship with something that they can't see, then they say, oh, they're into spookism or something. They have to label it and demean it because in their systems, the only thing that's real is matter. Mm-hmm. But in the African worldview, spirit is ultimate reality. And so from that premise, then, everything else about how Africans interact with the world and with each other is driven by that premise that ultimately we are all bound together by spiritual energy, by a God force, by a creative intelligence that has organized the entire universe and is present in that universe. The second point that he makes, the view that the earth is a living organic organism which must be treated with respect. That is a very profound idea. But notice how Mother Earth has been violated by capitalism, and very few people are upset by that. As long as we get the products that we want, we go our merry way. But all of the indigenous societies, whether on the African continent, whether in North America, South America, had this very deep respect for the earth as a living organism, and they treated Mother Earth with great respect. The understanding that individuality is good and to be celebrated, and that individualism is bad and destructive of social relations. This gets us to the idea of Ubuntu, this African idea that I am because we are, and because we are, therefore I am. In other words, the individual does not understand or see themselves separate from the community that gave them birth. The argument is that I don't even know who I am apart from the community into which I was born. My mm-hmm. value, my worth, my understanding of the world, all of that is shaped and informed by this community of which I am a part. And so we understand that, yes, you know, there is a thing called you do have personality, but mm-hmm. your personality, your existence is tied together with this group of which you are part, and you really can't be separated from that. The understanding that human beings are custodians, trustees, guardians of the land, and therefore that land cannot be owned, only utilized for the benefit of society. Now, when I read that, that stopped me cold in my tracks. Land cannot be owned. This entire American enterprise is based on the private ownership of land. And the entrepreneurs or real estate moguls, you know, the whole idea is to buy land and sell it and flip it and, you know, become wealthy.
Develop
on land speculation.
Yes.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Indigenous groups, they understood that the land was a gift from the Creator. It was here to be used, but it could not be owned, and therefore it couldn't be bought and sold. And you couldn't put a fence around it and say, this was mine and you can't come over here. All of these notions, these economic ideas of capitalism that are tied to private ownership of land are against the way Africans understand the way the world should be organized. So therefore, say for an example, in a country like Zimbabwe, where Europeans, you know, came in along with Cecil Rhodes and carved up that country, and then when independence came, there was a struggle in terms of who now could own the land, and of course the Europeans wanted to keep the vast majority of the land and the most valuable land at that. And again, so here you have a clash of this idea of, well, if the land is a gift from the Creator and it cannot be owned, then you Europeans don't have to get up off this land. I mean, you know, it's just that simple. But it also says something about how you and I, Sister Q, in 2023, now, African communalism understood that you need a place to lay your head at night. Mm-hmm. And so the idea of the family compound does not violate this understanding of land use. You know, obviously use as much land as you need to take care of your family, to have a plot that you can grow food on. All of that's fine. But this idea that, you know, maybe you live in North Carolina and I live in Atlanta and we pool our money and we buy some property in South Carolina that we own, that's debatable. Now, unless we are just buying it so that we can create something there that has long-lasting use. But the idea that we're just going to buy a house and flip it, no, that's not the way that we would utilize land and that resource in the modern era. So I just share these ideas as a way of forcing us to examine things that we just take for granted and ask, is this the best way to behave towards Mother Nature when these factories as a course in the process of their making different things and they pollute, you know, for, I mean, a great example was the whole story of, what was it, PG&E, Pacific Gas and Electric, in generating electricity, they used these pumps, and the pumps had to be cooled, and so they used fresh water to cool the pumps. But the pumps, in the process of the water being put through the system, it was contaminated. And then they turned around and put that contaminated water back into the fresh water supply. And as a result of that, people wound up with cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you understand that the earth is an organism, is a sacred organism, and has to be treated with respect, you certainly couldn't pollute the water and put it back into the system. And then when you see people getting cancer, you lie about the fact that you were the one that caused them to have these cancerous conditions. That is just totally unacceptable. But we have to be very careful, I think, Sister Q, that having lived in the United States for these past 400 years or whatever it has been, we've taken on a lot of these ways without carefully thinking the way I need to behave on a planet that is gasping for breath. You know, in other words, why aren't we talking about global warming on the news every day, all day? I mean, if we only have 7 years to reduce the fossil fuel consumption by 50%, that ought to be the driving conversation every time we turn on the television. But it's never even talked about.
I think part of it, Brother Ankti, is that the primary goal is depopulation. So, of course, they wouldn't talk about the planetary thing because that will help in the goal of depopulating the planet. And
why would depopulation be a goal, Sister Q?
To get rid of some people. It's more for them. The less people there are on the planet, the more it is for those who want to own stuff. It's more for them to own.
Well,
so,
it's even worse than that. The problem is these Europeans are one-tenth of the global population. Nine-tenths of the people on the planet are melanated.
Okay.
So you're right. It's definitely population control. You know, if there's 7.5 billion people on the planet, if 6 billion of them have to go away from here in order for us to stay in power, 6 billion people just got to go. So you're right. There is a very strong population control dimension to the way capitalism operates. And I think part of why we are not addressing global warming, to your point, is they've done the calculation. They know exactly how many people are going to perish. And that they're fine with that, you know.
How many? Where?
What we have to wake up to is that we are in the midst of dealing with the people who have no problem with seeing six billion people perish.
Exactly.
To save themselves. Absolutely no problem whatsoever. And we think that when they say that they're concerned about the well-being of everybody on the planet, we think that they're sincere. They're not. All you have to do is look at their behavior.
Well, they are concerned with your well-being. They want to know how fast you're going to get out of here.
COVID demonstrated that, didn't it?
Exactly.
They did nothing to address COVID when it first hit, and they didn't have a vaccine, and they didn't have any therapies, and the only thing that people could do was wear a mask and stay inside, and they fought like the Dickens to open up as quickly as they could, knowing full well that people were still toxic, were still infected, and you're right. So a million people in this country died. That probably could have been reduced by 750,000 if the government had just done common sense things.
Well, I think in exactly the opposite. I think they wanted to get rid of a bunch of people. So they used COVID to get people isolated so they could kill off a bunch. And we just think that it was COVID, but it wasn't. It was just blatant murder of a bunch of people. And we let it skip because, well, you know, it was a pandemic. What could, you know, nobody could do anything about it. So I don't believe anything they say. So
you're right.
I'm not even clear there was a pandemic. I just know that they got a lot of people kicked off the planet. You know, that's the bottom line for me. Yeah.
Well, see, the problem with that is that there will be other pandemics because, again, this economic system, because it disrespects the natural boundaries, is continually pushing human communities into areas where there is no adaptability. In other words, the more contact humans have with other species, they risk some form of viral infection.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that has to be a given. But you're right; there's no concern for other people's lives, and if they can be eliminated, all the better.
Regardless,
we're up against. Okay. We got 2 minutes. I just wanted to, I didn't even get to the solution that I wanted to offer, but when Us Lifting Us offers our community the opportunity to build what we call these Ulu-based communities, we are creating groups of 20 to 100 who are fully understanding and knowledgeable of the need why we have to build new communities based on African consciousness for ourselves, and open cooperative businesses, not capitalist businesses, but group-owned, family-centered businesses. It is those African-conscious, family-centered cooperative enterprises that's going to make the difference in terms of us being able to provide our own food, clothing, and shelter, our education of our children, health care for our communities, elder care for our seniors. All of that is within our means to do. Now that we have the framework and the model that can make this happen. So we'll talk more about that on the next installment, Sister Q.
Okay, brother. Brother Auntie, thank you for sharing all that you shared with us tonight. We are working incrementally, so as you fine-tune everything, it helps bring clarity to us, so we're all on the same page as we build. And I think that's very important, particularly considering that we're not all on the same page starting out. You know, we're not even all in the same, we're not even all in the same book, let alone on the same page. So
okay.
I appreciate you bringing clarity to us on all of this information. Anything else you want to say right quick before you go?
Fun to be with you. Say what?
I said, is there anything else you want to say right quick before we go? I think it's about 10.
No.
Okay. So thank you, Brother Auntie, and thank everyone who joined us this evening. Please join us again next Thursday evening at 9 Eastern Time for another installment of Dare to Win. Peace.
Don't you know, talking about a revolution sounds Don't you know, talking about a revolution, it sounds